because I thought that with regard to the information society, there's a lot that has that is not being done. A lot of this stuff is overly technical. There's a lot to do with applications and stuff, and there's whole issues, one of which is the subject that we're going to talk about today, that are being left alone. And it will become very, very important in the next 10 to 15 years. So this is my current habitus, so to speak, the Society Institute. And I'm also from Holland. And that's important in two different ways. The talk that I'm going to give you is about the notion of a digital nation and what that might mean for healthcare and the transformation of healthcare. The reason that I can do that is because I'm from Holland. Holland is not a big country, so I just learned that this is about 400 miles. Holland is about 100 miles, so it's about this large and about this wide, I think. And it has 16 million people. So that means that we're very densely populated, and it makes it easy for us to come online. So in Holland, 85% of the population is online, and of all the families with children, is 99.5% is online. And when you have that large number, or a number of people online, things start to happen. And the social use of software is one of them. So I'm going to talk to you about a digital nation and the effect that it has on healthcare. I know from your statistics that in Scotland, overall, there's about 17% of the people online. But here in this area, there will probably be more. But the idea is a little bit that I talk about a situation that might come into existence. So the main idea of my presentation today, and I will read this out because I think it's important, is that a population online creates an integrated digital infrastructure that contributes to a vital nation when developed properly. So, and you'll hear me iterate that again and again. There's 2.3 million households in Scotland. And to me, these 2.3 million households are one integrated digital infrastructure. And the thing that I want to talk about this afternoon is, what does that mean for the quality of healthcare? We could also talk about what it means for the quality of culture. We could also talk about what that means for the quality of government and e-government. But this afternoon, we're going to talk about what 2.3 million households using more and more information technology in the next 10 to 15 years might mean for healthcare. So it's going to be quite a boring presentation. I'm sorry. because it's not here yet. It's more an idea than reality. It's not about exciting applications and new things that we're all... It's not about gadgets, but it's more about ecologies and strange other concepts. And it's more about tomorrow than today. So it's going to be boring, but it's only lasting 2.5 hours. So that's okay. the idea is healthcare in a digital nation, challenges, opportunities, and the agenda. And it's actually between you, and with you I mean healthcare professionals, so I assumed you were healthcare professionals, and them, which is the people. And of course you're also the people, but now for me in this room you're healthcare professionals. And there's going to be a move in the next 10 years from you to them. We're working very hard on this, you. And this is going to be a major, major challenge. And I'm just trying to outline what kind of challenge it is, and hope that I make a case, so to speak. In that sense, this presentation is a bit of a plea, because when we shift our research agendas, when we shift our attention to this new area, there's much to be gained, but we have to do that in an early stage. To just recap where we are, this is an aging green population. This is the growth and the need for care for the next 3 or 4 decades. This is the exploding cost of healthcare at this moment. Of course we know all this. This is the rise in personnel needed. So in Holland we estimate that for the level of healthcare that we have today to maintain that same quality and level of healthcare let's say 15 or 20 years, we need 23% of the population to work in healthcare. And then the number of professionals in the next couple of decades will actually be maintaining at the same levels or declining slightly. So this is an interesting issue, not only for healthcare, but in this case for healthcare. So when you look at this graph, the conclusion is, however efficient professionals work, society will require more care. So the idea, my sense of urgency behind this whole issue in the rest of the presentation, is that in 15 years, when I'm at home, Foyle or one of my partners or children Foyle, there will be no general partition, or there won't be enough general partition. There will be no home care. Not because the people don't want to deliver home care. There's just not enough professionals. And that's a normal statement of fact. But this is a major challenge. And what we're going to do today is see what IT can do in that issue to solve that that challenge. So so that's the one part of the one basis, so to speak, for this presentation. And the other part, of course, is that I think that everybody will come online. And of course, I know that everybody will be, not completely everybody. We're involved in lots of the e-societies institute is involved in a lot of other projects. One of the projects is to get all the elderly people online in Holland. We're involved in projects to create online therapeutic help for demented Alzheimer patients. So we know very, very specific audiences will not be online in the same way we will be online. But we assume, for the sake of argument during this presentation, that everybody will be online in Scotland. Now let's look at the difference. So you are professionals. You work standards and protocols. You work in a work environment. The work environment has a digital infrastructure, and I assume you work on healthcare. They are normal people. That's a completely different breed of people. So you're professionals and they are normal people. That's a very deeply different breed of people. And they don't have protocols and standards, but they have habits and convictions. They don't work in a work environment, they work in their homes. They have a digital, you have a digital infrastructure, they also have a digital infrastructure. And it's quickly getting more and more professional. Actually, a lot of times, you have better stuff at home than you have in the office. It's a bit faster, a bit newer, and whatever. So don't underestimate the force of the digital infrastructure. You're working on healthcare, they're also working on healthcare, but in their own way. And the idea is, we're working here, and all our attention is focused here, and we will, and that's a promise, we will shift our attention to this area. So let's see what you do. Well, of course, you do amazing things. This is what you do. This is what I found on the internet, the Scottish Centre for Telehealth. This is an amazing thing. It's Cisco. Cisco is the company in the world that actually builds almost the whole entire internet. Every box that runs the internet is built by Cisco. And this is, it looks like a phone booth, but it's actually a health booth. And here you see a person in the booth. This is a practitioner, and this is a patient. And they're in full eye contact. And the booth is outfitted with heart monitors and all kinds of ECG and blood meters and whatever. But they're telepresenced together, so to speak. So when this patient actually puts the heart monitor on her heart, I don't know what the English word is for one of these things that you listen to, the heart noise. This woman has speakers or earphones that actually then allow her to listen to the heart of this patient. So there's actually, this is telemedicine, pure song, and you in Scotland are the first in the world to actually implement this and test it. So that's interesting. I like phone booths also, so that's it. And of course you will be doing this. I have one of these iPhones. So these are medical applications on the iPhones. These are the MRI scans, this is anatomy books, this is patients, this is also patient administration. So in the next 5 to 10 years, professionals will actually start using this stuff that's already been taken care of. You also do this. This is Health Scotland's virtual learning environment that's taken care of. And you also do this online recruitment for healthcare professionals. Great. So you're all set. You also do some information and give some information to patients. So this is one part. We're focused on the professional sector. We make applications for the professional sector. We make infrastructures for the professional sector. And yet it will not be enough. So then the question is, if it's between you and them, what do they do? Well, they are a digital nation. And that means that not only citizens are online, but all your patients are online. So what they do is they use Google. So I Googled asthma in Scotland. That's really ugly. I have no idea what the quality of these results are. I have no idea what I can do with this. But this is a general purpose thing. Google, searching information is a general purpose activity. In Holland, it shows that 85% of the internet users use the internet for gathering some kind of medical information. Of course, the quality of that is not very, very well. So you made this. This is Youth Health Talk, and there's also Health Talk. Very, very beautiful. You should actually look at this site. So this is Youth Health Talk. This is about teenage cancer. When you click on this button, actually we can do that because I think we're online. Very, very nice. Yes, glasses. I was hoping that when I went fly to Glasgow that I wouldn't need my glasses, but I think this is Youth Health Talk. It's very, very well done, but it's also a very interesting new concept. So let's say diabetes type 1, doing injections every day. He hated doing the injections at first. Interview, age at the interview, 17, age of diagnosis, 14. He developed a huge respect. And now I have to find him around.
They are so helpful, if I didn't have them, I don't think that I'd be allowed today to be quite so. I think that I would have been, because it's like they tell me something, but they don't just tell me something as if to stand over you, you've got to do this, you've got to do that. They stand and they tell me, look, Paul, if you don't do this, this is going to happen. You need to start doing it. It's for your own.
So it's not hardcore professional medical information. It's not prevention. These people just share their story. They make their anxiety be felt by me. That's the anxiety that I feel, or the nervousness, or the whatever. And this is, and it's filled. There's hundreds and hundreds of these small movies on each of the different aspects of these illnesses. So it's almost like a new phase of dealing with information and talking to patients and getting patients to participate in the and take a position of responsibility with regard to their own health. So this is a really good example of something that is working right now. And then this is something else. This is also what patients are building up right now. This is a small picture of Philips. Philips made something called Motiva. This is a product range. You see a scale here, and then you see a blood pressure meter, and a blood pressure meter, a glucose meter, a blood flow meter, and an ECG meter. And they're all wirelessly connected with this thing. So that means that when you stand on each one of these scales, the results are transmitted to the internet. And then you can see here how your weight is doing. And if something is happening, you can get either a standard movie explaining something to you, or you can push a button and you're immediately connected to a help desk. So this is a whole series of hardware, consumer hardware, that is totally integrated with a functioning backend. They did a piece of research with 700 pages in Canada that had chronic heart failure. And this kind of setup reduces the number of bed nights by 17%. Which is a rather dramatic reduction. So you're at home, you feel bad, you know, there's chest pains and whatever. Normally you call up, they don't know what's happening, so they send an ambulance just to be sure. Now what you do is just push the button here. Say, well, put on your ECG meter, and we'll actually talk you through this, and we'll see what's happened to your ECG. And then you can look at the ECG and go, well, it's not as bad as you think, maybe. It's going to last another 20 minutes, but go lie in your bed. It'll be alright. 70% reduction in bed nights. But this is Philips. It's not Nokia. It's not Siemens. And this is actually quite complex. The problem in Holland with these things is that when you come into a house, people don't have a place for this thing. It's using the telephone, or it's using the TV, so that it's not using the PC. That's good. There's a couple of other systems that use PCs. And one of the biggest problems of patients to get to adopt these systems is that they have no place for a PC or a webcam, and they're in their bed, and then the webcam should be there. And they're like, no, I don't want to use this. I'm calling. I'll call you, just as we used to. So all this hardware is proprietary because it's from, in this case, one supplier, but it's also a hassle for people in the home. That's the hardware. This is software that people say. This is a Trixie tracker. The Trixie tracker now has 793,543 naps taken by babies. And it has 491,758 diapers changed. And it also has 312,541 bottles fed. So that means that this is for parents that they have no idea what the rhythm of their baby is. So they either want to have an idea of when to expect that the baby will wake up or will sleep or whether something is amiss or wrong, or they want to just share this information with another group of people. So they add this information using one of these telephones or on the internet, and then you get something like this. So this is the number of naps that the baby took for these days, which is, I don't know, a little bit over 2 weeks. And then this is the range, this is the pattern of the baby. So you can actually predict when it's going to wake up or when it's going to fall asleep. Now, I'm getting a little bit nervous with these things, because usually I would assume as a mother or a father you would be able to predict, because you have an inner sense of when, how your child is doing. But apparently some people don't, so they use this. Now suppose you depend on this stuff, then this small application really interferes with your quality of life. Suppose you're not really smart, or you're really young, you don't understand life and what's going on, but you have a child. And then this prediction of the child's daily rhythm saves you. It's actually supporting the quality of life immediately, with an immediate effect. And that's a completely different kind or a different quality of the use of information technology than before. So when I download a movie and it stops in the middle of downloading the movie, I don't miss it. When I'm tracking the weather or something and I can't track the weather, I don't miss it. But this is the kind of application that is going to appear in the next 10 to 15 years, very, very quickly. This is applications that are running right now. We'll be using more and more of these small applications that support our notion of quality of life immediately, day to day, second by second. If they do so, we need to design them really, really well. But there's no education for this. So this is another piece of software. This is an electronic patient file for a patient, which is what I have on my, this is it. So now I switched over to the application. So this is an electronic patient file that I have on this machine. So here's conditions, and here's events, and here's medications. It's very important to look closely, because electronic patients files are a hot subject in healthcare. We have a lot, well, I think we're here in England, we just dropped a major development of a national scheme of have all the medical data in one database. I'm not really aware of that, but in Holland we're working on it. We're a smaller country, so we haven't dropped it yet. But this is an electronic patient file now at home. Now usually what you think is that professionals are the very complex people, so they have complex administrative systems. And then when I go to the home, it's nice to use software, but it's not as complex. Actually the reverse is true. Using this kind of software in the home is way more complex than professionals in the hospital. I'll give you a couple of reasons. This is medications. So here I have prescriptions. This is what my general practitioner has. I visit my general practitioner twice a year. Maybe I use two medications, so he has four records for me. This is over-the-counter, the stuff that I bought myself. He doesn't know about. This is vaccinations. He doesn't know about. This is vitamins. He doesn't know about that I use. And this is natural remedies. And then this is dosage tracking. When I bought this software for $40, it took me 5 minutes to download and 1 second to boot up. It had 20 different drivers for different glucose meters in the United States. So that means that if I'm a diabetes patient and I'm kind of, you know, very varying in my blood sugar, I might measure myself 3 to 4 or 5 times a day. I'm going to put it in there also as well. So that means that of all these things, there's 4 things that I do at home, and only 1 thing that the general practitioner has in his administration, which is the 4 records that I have. Of course, when I'm older or when I have a couple of kids, there might be more records. And then, of course, here's the monitoring. You just saw Philips Motiva. This is lab results, and this is self-monitoring. So I'm standing on the weighing scale in the morning. That's in my electronic patient file. I'm standing on the weighing scale in the evening. It's in my electronic patient file. I'm doing 5 glucose measurements every day. So that means that's 1,500 a year. and then I have 600 weight measurements a year. So that means I have over 2,000 or 2,500 measurements a year, and I'm not really, let's say, an off patient. But my general practitioner only has four measurements, four records, or whatever, six, eight. But it doesn't relate at all to the 3,000 that I have. So the interesting thing is that once I start to look at home healthcare, whatever you want to call it, and the electronic support of home healthcare, I have a much more complex environment than we envisioned. Of course, I forget to weigh myself. I weigh myself with half my dress on, half my suit on. So when I start measuring, I'm not a professional. It's not very functional. So I have ugly measurements. But the funny thing is that when I get to the general practitioner, he can really do something with it. Actually, I might do something with it. Supposing the fact that I have then something, here's a food diary, here's exercise, here's drinking habits, I might actually monitor my drinking habits and then have software analyze my drinking habits and give me an advice, which is what I now do with the general practitioner. You know, when you have migraine, you're asked to maintain a headache diary for 3 weeks. And then the general practitioner gives you an advice. It would be easy to actually do that online. So I'm trying to paint you a picture with software that is already existing. Well, actually, this is quite sorry software, because the company went broke. But I like the pictures. So I use them as an example. And of course, in the United States, as opposed to Holland, when you move from Stockholm to Moscow to Barcelona to London. So there's no single general practitioner as we have in Holland that maintains all my medical data. So suppose I have all my medical data and then the company goes broke. What happens to my medical data? That's a whole different thing. So the complexity of patient home healthcare as opposed to the professional environment is actually higher and it is more unpredictable, but I could do more with it if I had the means. It's a completely different environment. And then, of course, we're talking here being middle-aged and quite intelligent, I assume. But, of course, I'm an information designer. So my, let's say, design person, my persona, is a 64-year-old lady that is maybe slightly demented, or maybe a 75-year-old lady that is slightly demented and doesn't really understand it, but depends, is living alone. 43% of the population here is living alone. They're not all elderly. But there's more and more people that are elderly that are living alone and is depending on these kinds of systems. This is a design challenge. There's no education for these kinds of design challenges. So this is what people slowly build up if you live in a digital nation. So this is an electronic patient file for citizens, and this is an application in my home. I'll show you one more example using this application. This is a condition. I go to all conditions now. Look up a condition. Let's say a digestive condition. Let's say I have a pseudomembranous colitis. I assume you know what that is. I have no idea. suppose I have a pseudomembranous diarrhea, and I'm adding that to my condition list. All of a sudden you see here, from the internet, antibiotic-associated diarrhea, diseases and conditions from the Mayo Clinic. This application is actually 24 hours a day with its fingers in the internet. So I just add a condition, a common cold or a serious disease or whatever, and then immediately from the internet, this registration, the fact that I write this down is supported by extra information from the internet. Now it becomes a powerful tool. Actually, when I add this, I might also, using Web 2.0, add a community of people that have the same disease. So I'm not alone. I'm sitting at home, I'm just saying that I have a certain illness, and all of a sudden I'm connected to a lot of information and a lot of people that have the same kind of illness. So that's an interesting notion when you use this application at home. And then, of course, there's new contenders on the market. But this is HealthVault by Microsoft, providing the same service. And this is Google Health by Google. Just like the NHS did in Holland, we're working on a national patient file system. And 8 weeks ago, 10 directors of larger hospitals had been to the United States looking at Google stuff and said, well, why don't we quit working on this national EPD, EPF, electronic patient file system? Because Google in 3 months put more than 8 million records online. So why don't we shift all our medical data of all of Holland into the Google system? And don't bother with making all these advanced systems ourselves or whatever, because Google is a lot better. So there's a whole shifting, confusing issue. Where are we going to put what data where, and who's going to use it? Because this one, as well as this one, is for me, the patient at home, and it's not made for the professionals. So this, these are just a couple of examples to see that it's a really hot area. Everybody's working in it. In the next 10 years, all these different trends will be developed further. And the problem is, it's going to be really, really messy. So all these people currently have advanced research groups on e-health. E-health is a really, really hot market. So when you then talk about a digital nation, you have a population slowly coming online. You have loads of applications, hardware, software being developed by all kinds of people. And then we'll have people slowly getting used to these things and having the skills. So the question now is, what does an integrated digital infrastructure of 2.3 million households do for e-health? Suppose that we have this whole environment and everything in it, and it could work. It works together with the professionals, and it also works in the home. That we could actually unleash this kind of latent, hidden power that is there and prevent it from becoming really, really ugly and messy and unusable and unpredictable, and line it up and streamline it and have all these people maintain their health data. That's a challenge up and above the normal developments, because the normal developments are already taking place. So Philips and Siemens and Nokia, all these guys are working. They think it's a great market. People are going to buy this stuff. Actually, I just bought an electronic patient file system, and it's this. I bought it in the Dutch equivalent of Tesco. It's about £15. It's a small USB stick. If you shove it into a Windows machine, an electronic patient file system is booting up, and you can start loading up your medical data. You can take it with you on holiday. So I can swim with it, do all kinds of stuff. I don't like to swim, but in order to test this stuff, I probably dip my toe into something. So that means that there's, I'm trying to paint a picture of a development that is taking place slowly but surely. It's going to be messy unless we coordinate it. It will not be coordinated at the level of the individual suppliers. It will not be coordinated at the level of the individual patients. Who is the party in society who gets to stand up, who needs to stand up and give citizens a voice? It will not be the suppliers. So in my mind, there's going to be only one party, and it's either some kind of government, because governments are organizations that we created that give a voice to the people when something needs to happen, and they can't do it at the individual level. And the funny thing is, that's why I said that this is a very boring strategic issue. It is not in the mind of anybody, this issue. It's far on the horizon. There's no sense of urgency. Actually, a politician would ask the very nice and good and much used political question, what happens if I do nothing? Which is a good, solid question. What happens if I do nothing? Because Philips will be making this stuff. Nokia will be making this. And they will not cooperate and interoperate, because they hate giving each other's markets away. So who will then ask for all these suppliers to come up with stuff that works in a coherent and consistent fashion in a whole household of a 75-year-old lady? Well, they won't. They will do loads of research, but they will not produce something that is consistent in a household. Unless somebody stands up and says, well, we're 5.5 million people, and we would like to use this stuff, but we have to be interoperable. Okay. I wrote a report for the Ministry of Health in Holland. And this was the context. This is 2009, and this is the Health Demand in Society. Partly filled by professionals, and we have in Holland about 3 to 4 million people who take care of a partner. So this is the uniform. In 2020, the demand for healthcare will be higher. but I will still have the same number of professionals, and then here I put the same number of informal caretakers. So there's a gap in the middle, which will be partly filled by professionals by working in a different way, because I don't have any more professionals, and partly filled by informal caretakers. So what we proposed, since the eSociety Institute looks at the possibilities of information technology, is in this area we create a digital health information infrastructure. And the idea behind it is that society already has well-functioning healthcare. So society's needs for healthcare have been solved by creating a professional healthcare system. That's good. There's money, there's protocols and standards, there's policy making, there's quality control, there's all kinds of stuff in the professional healthcare sector. That will not be enough. So besides making the professional healthcare system much better and streamlined and more efficient and more effective and all these inspiring things, we now need to shift our perspective to 2.3 million households and do the same thing in the 2.3 million households as we are doing in the professional sector, but with a completely different quality, as I showed. So the idea is, suppose that I will do this in normal households. What would I want to do? Well, I would want to do this. Online diagnosis. When I have an online diagnosis, I need to determine what my care needs are, my needs for care are. When I have my needs for care, which are unrelated to the diagnosis, I need to be able to actually enter into a contract with a supplier in the region or somebody else. And when I have a contract, I need to execute the process of care. And I need to maintain quality. In the professional sector, this is all completely organized. But when I'm at home, it's not organized at all. The funny thing is that just as with the patient file system that I showed you just now, in each of these phases there are examples already. So software is already being created. What the idea is that if you create this, it supports the professional by taking away certain actions, so it makes the professional sector much more effective, but at the same time it professionalizes informal caretakers. There's two kinds of informal caretakers. Those that are really structural, they really like it, they're actually becoming semi-professionals. They're fully using this environment and can optimize their activities. And there's the incidental caretakers. So something that is here, totally integrated and well-functioning, will actually support both people. I'll give you a couple of Dutch examples. This is in Holland called PsyQ. It's a diagnosis system for fear, depression, eating disorders, personality problems, psychotrauma, sexuality. This is a series of 40 to 50 tests. You start with a very simple test. Depending on the answer, you get a series of other tests. The guys that made this, and this is fully functional, so this red button says start the test. The guys that made this said that it might almost replace an intake conversation. And an intake conversation is about 200 euros in Holland. It is that good. So when you fill out all the questionnaires, you know so well what the diagnosis might be that a practitioner adds something, of course. They always add something. But it's not that you know nothing. So this is something that works in 2009. And I'm just envisioning what will happen when we develop it the next 10 to 15 years. This is choosing better, which is a comparison between care providers. So this is, you can choose different care providers here, and it compares them on quality, price, and services, and whatever. This screen doesn't show you anything, but this is a paralyzed guy from the neck down who needs very, very intensive care, 24 hours a day. And this is his site to organize it. All the volunteers that take care of him 24 hours a day are in this system. They have an agenda, so everybody knows where everybody is. They have a very, very simple messaging system, so that they know either that they did some shopping or took care of him. And he pays them also for it. So he's actually completely self-organizing. And this is not—I'm not talking about simple care. This is actually quite extensive, 24 hours a day, 7 days a day care. And this was so successful that he opened it up, and now anybody in Holland can use it. So it's filled with volunteers that look for people to care for and people that need care to actually look for volunteers. So this is an example of self-organizing care outside of professional, outside of the professional limb, of course, in a situation where you exactly know what you have with. There is a diagnosis and you are with. And then this is online therapy. I know that Denmark and the UK, and the UK, does that include Scotland?
It does.
Okay, good.
At the moment.
I'm in a foreign country anyway. So Denmark, the UK, Belgium, and Holland are very, very good in e-mental health. And actually, Holland is a little bit better than the other three. And the reason is that in Holland, psychologists and psychiatrists don't object to somebody sitting at home behind a screen doing online depression therapy. Whereas in the other three countries, in the end, the professionals think, I know it's possible, but I can't imagine somebody sitting at home doing something behind the screen leading to some useful result in therapies, in sense of therapy. So we're very active in this. So this is do I need help with self-tests? How can I get help? And this is actually the online help for different things, anxiety, and I just showed you. This is working. There's a business model, you get it paid, the insurance companies pay it. This is starting to work. Of course it works, let's say online depression therapy works for between 10 and 20% of the depression patients. So I'm not saying here that this is all a problem solved, I'm just indicating a couple of trends. But I wanted to have examples that I know that work today. So maybe there's examples in the UK also, but I just didn't know. So that means that if you look at what we talked about, online diagnosis, determining care, contracts, comparing, doing the care process, I haven't seen any quality programs yet, but in each of these boxes, there's something going on already. Individual people made something or whatever. But it's very messy. Because if I make an online diagnosis, I cannot extract a diagnosis and take it with me to another application that then where I can then determine the care needs. There's no standards here, and there's no digital standards, so I cannot take this all. When I have needs for care, I cannot take these care needs with me into a contract, whatever, piece of software. And if I have this, I cannot take the contract with me to organize the care process. So that means that all of this stuff is happening. It's happening in many, many different directions. And in effect, it will be unusual. So I was the assessor of an IT project between gynecologists. There's five gynecologists and two hospitals who are working together. It costs about €2 million. It's 2.5 years in an extensive project. So what happened is that you get a screen and you have a gynecological whatever issue, and you can have a small questionnaire, and then you get a proposal for a treatment, and you can choose which gynecologist you want to work with in whichever hospital. And it requested from them to work with the same protocols, to develop the test, to develop the website, with major project. And we assessed the project, and we were in a room like this with 40 different people, also caregivers. And there was one general practitioner. So we were talking about it, and these gynecologists were really, it's a great thing. We're working on it for a couple of years. And then the general practitioner said, so if I understand it really well, when my patient gets a treatment from you, I can go to this website, and then I can see all her medical data and also all your judgment. Yes. Okay, and now the other question is that when she also has diabetes, what do I do? Mm-hmm. And then the gynecologist said, well, that's not our problem, we're a gynecologist. And I said, well, is that then another portal? I said, yeah, well, probably yes. Okay, so comorbidity in elderly people is, you have usually four different things. Arthritis, and heart failure, and a little bit of asthma or whatever. There's four different things. So that would mean you have, let's say, general practitioners have four different portals. Well, not only general practitioners, you also have four different portals. And then when you think about electronic patient files at home, I'm taking care of myself, my partner, my two children, and my mother, and maybe my partner's father. So I have 5-6 of these environments with multiple illnesses and many different specialists. So the complexity of the kinds of illnesses that I coordinate at home is much larger than the complexity of the single specialist that actually does diabetes every day. So there's a whole interesting thing that when you want to do this, there's a whole a real strange world that opens up when you really think through the details. And nobody does it. So the idea is that when you want to do this, we have a problem. There won't be enough professionals to provide healthcare for all of society. We need some support. This is possible support. It is being worked on. There's many, many different applications being worked on. But we need to create a seamlessly integrated information infrastructure for health and homes. It is not on the agenda of any of the parties in society. It is not being taught in universities. It's not being taught in other schools. And it's not on the agenda of the ministry. And now I'm not even talking about Health 2.0. I'm just going to leave this. I slipped in this slide. I'm not going to talk about Web 2.0, participative. You know, Web 2.0 is YouTube and Flickr and all these communities and whatever. And the major transformative effect that will happen will move towards collaborative health. I'm just citing simple applications. Not advanced applications, simple applications. But projecting them into the future, that in the next 10 to 15 years, the kind of complexity that will come, let's say, will arise in the home is almost beyond control. So suppose we would take up the challenge. I see three challenges that we need to address in thinking about a digital nation, and in this case, harnessing the power or the possible power of this digital nation and all these households for healthcare. One is scale. We need to be able to think on a completely different scale. I'll give you a couple of examples. One is a new quality, and the other one is a new way of developing these things. So this is scale. So all these houses have one or more electronic patient files. And they will coexist together with the professionals. They will actually be the digital health infrastructure in a nation, in this case, country. But when I'm at a home, I have 2.3 million digital workplaces. I need 24-hour a day, 7 days a week, quality of digital availability here. And then they will be using a patchwork of applications. I have a digital thermometer that doesn't work together with my Nokia digital glucose meter, and then I have an ECG band that I use for sports, but I can also use it, which is somebody else's. It's going to be a mess. So people in the home will use a patchwork of applications. We will have way more data than professional applications, as I said, with all the different measurements that we have. And then we're sloppy, actually, by collecting this data. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. When I'm on holiday, I'm doing nothing. And I manage families of EPFs. And I manage many illnesses and specialists at the same time. That's a completely different kind of complexity. I'm describing, actually, a new area. It is already there, but I'm just describing it for the first time. And the reason I describe this is because I have this idea that we could develop an integrated, functioning digital infrastructure in 2.3 million households. That's the new idea. Otherwise, I wouldn't be describing it in this way. I wouldn't miss anything. This stuff is already happening. It's already there. But I find it messy because I want to unlock the force that I have there. Why do I want to do that? Because the number of professionals is declining in the healthcare sector, and the cost is rising beyond control. So we need digital urban planning. That's what we need. Why do we need digital urban planning? We have already architects and builders for individual applications. We have loads of guys that build individual applications, websites left and right, and themes, and hardware. Very complex sometimes, very simple at other times, but we have the equivalent of architects and builders. We also have project developers, because we have investors. So we have people that see an opportunity, provide some money. So we build this stuff and we have it. But who tends the ecology? Because above and beyond the architects and the building companies and the project developers here in Glasgow, there's something called urban planning. There's a couple of people that don't build, they don't give money, but they just coordinate what's happening. Sometimes based on regulations, sometimes based on conversations. But the urban planning department of the city of Glasgow is dominant in maintaining the quality of the city. Where's the urban planning department for the digital environment? In this case, healthcare. We don't have urban planning at that level. Because this is the first time that we identify that at that level, there might be a digital nation that is really working, coexisting, interoperating, that might provide a vital social function in society. So the reason that we have the internet, and of course you remember that the internet is, let's say, a little over 5,000 days old, So the public internet is very, very short. We're all of us are online. It is not so that we neglected this issue for years and years and years. This is the first time this issue comes up. The rise of complexity at this level. But I'm not talking about e-commerce here. I'm not talking about downloading movies or music. I'm talking about a vital function of society. And now we're connecting a couple of issues that make it so that we talk about these notions. So this is the first one is that we need to be able to coordinate at a different scale. And with scale is different kinds of complexity. And then we need a new quality of design. Normal people require high quality design. Professionals don't require high quality design because I pay them. So you're going to be here at 8 in the morning and you're going to use this software. And then the professional knows that the quality of the software is, well, you know, it's beyond control, but, you know, it's part of the job. But at home, there's nobody's, you know, I'm not going to use this software. After 5 minutes, go like, this is unusual. I'm not going to use this. I cannot force people to use software. So I really need to attend to the quality of software. So that means the good usability, software special needs. But what's more important, I need to design software for inspiration. There is, as I said, and showed on the second sheet, there is a very, very deep difference, a very, very deep distinction between professional environments and informal environments. So when I take care of a patient at home, I'm emotionally attached. I don't have professional detachment. My partner, let's give an example. My partner breaks something, and she has to be in bed, flat. She cannot move. Okay, so she comes home. She's flat in bed. She needs to go to the toilet. I have no clue. What am I supposed to do? There is no home care person. I have a problem. I would like to go to my screen and then say, I am in bed. I need to go to the toilet. Show me how it's done. I have an IQ of below 100. I'm a simple person, which is 50% of the population. So I don't understand a lot. You cannot hand me a protocol. I don't know if you will using a toilet. What's a toilet thing that you use when you're in bed? What's that called?
A bedpan.
So that's probably a very complex protocol for a bedpan. I don't know. I looked up one of these protocols once. It was 4 pages long. Exchanging something here. When you describe it, I cannot use a formal description. I need an evocative small video. Look at it, try it, look at it again, and try it again. Maybe I do it. The interesting thing is, I didn't need that video yesterday. And then after 2 weeks, my wife is okay. I don't want to look at the video ever again. I don't want to. I'm not a professional that has a 4-year training, and I will not be in professional healthcare for 25 years. I will be in this specific healthcare for exactly 2.5 weeks, but I need it now, and otherwise I'm in deep shit. Trouble. if it's somebody else, it's okay, you know, but I mean, if it's your partner, it's, you know, all things start to happen, you know. So that means that the informal home environment is something completely different, and I need specific design. I need a just-in-time knowledge environment on a large scale. There are maybe 1,500 of these actions. I need a just-in-time knowledge environment for people with an IQ under 100, and they need to be able to actually understand it and make no mistakes afterwards. And then just throw it away. It's completely different. It doesn't relate at all to the professional development, but it is vital to the social to the quality of life in a nation. So that's why we came up with. Oh, this is an example. This is Plaintree, which is a concept, an American concept for healthcare. You should actually look it up, very interesting. But you have something else here, a small hospital here in Glasgow that operates on similar principles. But one of the things that Plaintree does is that they say that information and the way patients deal with information is essential to the way they deal with their own health. So they say, we believe access to understandable health information can empower individuals to participate in their health. So central in this hospital concept, in this healthcare concept, is the concept of open medical records. There is no doctor that has access to all the information, and you have nothing. No, you can read whatever you want. Actually, you're invited, you're stimulated to add information to your medical record, so that the medical record becomes a dialogue between you and the doctor. So when you're diagnosed, the doctor says, "Well, it's probably diabetes, but I suggest you go downstairs to the library, find out what diabetes is, and then tell me what to do." So you go downstairs, you find out what diabetes is, then you go upstairs and say, "Well, I just learned that there's three different ways of treating me. What do you think?" And then, of course, you're in the same dialogue as before, but now it's your dialogue, and it's not the doctor's dialogue. So there is a way of dealing with information. There is a way of designing information into a health process, a way of giving access to information that is not a functional, administrative, just opening up information, but it is turning information into an inspiration that shifts my existential position in the health process, that makes me take responsibility, that actually makes me recognize I have diabetes. I've seen 25 videos of people, very reassuring, that have the same problem. The problem doesn't go away, but people just tell me what the problem was and what they did, and that they were scared shitless, but now deal with it, which helps me. And then it tells me what to do, and what then to do, and what the pitfalls are. And so it actually allows me to grow into the healthcare process. It is a completely different notion of dealing with information. And to them, it's actually, this is the other way around, and to them it's actually central to their philosophy, so they have all kinds of pieces of text. So that's why we came up with, we need an architecture for inspiration. So now when we think about technical systems, information systems, we have technical design criteria. In the last couple of years, we have usability design criteria. Now, suppose I have a very well-functioning electronic patient file system or something else, and I can also read it on my telephone or on my PC or when I'm outside or whatever. I can still be really depressed when I use it. So there's a third kind of design criteria that we need, and we call them vital criteria. And that means that every screen that I use concerning my health has to be inspirational. I use the screen, it is never administrative, but every time I touch a screen, it inspires me to take responsibility, it allows me to know more where I am, it provides me with choices that I can understand and it can do, I can act upon those things. So that means that it is not enough to have technical criteria, it is not enough to be able to read the screen, but I have to be inspired. That's a whole new set of design criteria. So when you go and think about a digital nation, and it is the people in the nation that use software, and it is not just for entertainment, buying holidays, listening to music, do general information gathering or whatever, but it interferes directly with the quality of your life, you need new design criteria. These design criteria have not been specified. They are not taught. So I have students that can design a company website. I have students that can design games, but they don't know what loneliness is. They have no clue what loneliness is. Actually, and that's really funny, when I as an information designer go to people that work in backward neighborhoods, as we do in Holland, we've been using internet to increase quality of life in backward neighborhoods in Holland for 8 years now. When I talk to professionals and I say, what is the architecture of loneliness, which is a silly word, I say, we want to design something for people that are lonely. In how many different ways do people get lonely? They have no idea. They never thought about it. But I'm an information designer, so I need to either design a green system or a red system or whatever. It doesn't really matter. But you can become lonely because you're deaf. Your eyesight is not very well. You're actually going through a personality change and you're a really nasty person. Makes you very lonely very, very quickly. Or you're immobile. And those are completely different ways, but the result is that people experience increased loneliness. But in these four different ways of turning, slowly growing into a situation of loneliness, I have to do four different things when I design information systems. Not when I'm a practitioner that walks into the neighborhood and just deals with it. Because they do it in a humane way, they never specified it, they never made it explicit. So when you design systems for a digital nation, you ask a design question that even for the social and healthcare professionals provokes them into thinking and looking at health in a completely different way. So this is a very necessary step that we need to develop. And then the last one is, of course, I'm a designer, so I'm a bothered, but there is no business case, nobody's going to pay for it. There's no sense of urgency, there's no politician that's going to say, oh, we need to do this tomorrow, especially not now. And it's a really complex design challenge, which is not, and one part of the complexity is that we have to use users extensively, so we have to use new methods called co-design, or we have to not only design something for a single patient, but for a whole social environment, and invite volunteers and whatever, so we have to use social innovation. This is very complex. We need completely new models of development. So to conclude my talk, what I wanted to talk about is the notion of a digital nation. And this digital nation thing is slowly developing, and more people get more online in a more and more advanced way. And more advanced is using applications for quality of life stuff. It grows on you. I cannot miss it. I need to deal with this stuff. It really helps me. And this goes beyond entertainment. And so then we need to handle these challenges. And they are on nobody's agenda. So that's why I said that the main idea was a population online creates an integrated digital infrastructure that contributes to a vital nation. Not just to an entertainment nation, to a vital nation. When developed appropriately. And so the challenge is, to come back to the broader strategic angle, and the reason that I still talk about this stuff, because I think that this is an idea whose time has come. In the sense that you can unlock the potential of this digital stuff that we think about and that we use day by day, but that we need to think in a completely different way. You need to really conceptualize it and not go like, well, we already solved it in the professional sector. We're just going to wait until we solve it there really well, and then everybody else is going to use it. It's a completely different situation, but we never made that explicit. We never conceptualized it in that way. We need to reconceptualize it. And then I think, but that's my personal opinion, I think we have to start today in order to be somewhere in about 10 years. And 5 years is tomorrow in information technology. But in 10 years, if we want to be somewhere at least in 10 years, we have to start to do something today. So taking care of yourself together, I hope that healthcare in a digital nation will actually be this country. Thank you.